This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Lynn Pratt,
Barbara Pratt,
and Jane Bolton.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now, Lynn, we've heard a bit about your early days in the military service, but you were involved in horse racing.
That was after I came out of doing my training. I lived with my parents for a while and worked. Seeing I got my heavy traffic license, I joined Nolan Concrete Products as a second driver. They had a permanent one, but my boss and I got on very well, and he paid for me to do... I sat a wireman's course.
A wireman's course.
In those days, I have a wireman's ticket where I can do electrical work up to the meter.
Oh, okay.
And I wasn't allowed to do the meter, but I could do electrical work in the house and things like that, mainly because... the firm did a lot of concrete block work, and we were always waiting for an electrician to come and put conduit in and things like that. So we could get on. But getting back to the horse, our family and mum's family were always interested in racing, so I decided I would try to get a trotter. So my first horse was called King's Girl. It belonged to a Fred Moody from Linton, and I remember driving up to his place and was wondering why the car was boiling all the time, and till I got up there and then realised how high it was.
When you said the car was boiling, so in those days, if you're going up a steep hill, the car would overheat.
Yes. I got up there and then he laughed and he says, yes, everyone stops halfway up because their car's boiling. In those days, of course, there was no such thing as putting in antifreeze and things like that to raise your boiling point. However, I didn't have much success because I didn't know anything much about training horses. And
what made you choose trotting?
Because you could do it yourself.
So you were actually the... They call it a jockey in trotting?
The driver.
So you were your own driver.
So, Lynn, did you pick up a horse from this guy, Rudy?
Yes.
Did you have a float? What did you have?
I had a horse float.
Okay.
Towed behind my car. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't really know much, and looking back, it was always... I fed it too well. It was far too fat. But then I got a horse called Bruce again, which a guy called Bill Stedman picked it up for me. He came down from up north, and it certainly was never fat, because I used to walk all day. Would never settle down, and it finished up. I converted it to straight out trotting, and it was very fast, but partway through I found out it was blind in one eye. That's why I was nervous. But it wasn't a white eye, it was a normal eye, but he was blind in one eye. And anyway, finished up, he won 8 races for me.
Did you actually own the horse? Did you buy it from the owner?
Yes.
And what did it cost you for feed? A week, say?
For feed?
Yeah. What did you feed it on?
Oh, oats and chaff. Yeah.
Okay.
Not like, see, today, the horse feed would have been ideal for that horse. Because the oats used to stir him up.
Did you boil it? Did you boil the oats or barley? No.
No, just
straight.
I didn't know much, really.
Obviously, but had eight wins.
Yeah, that's over good. About 4 years.
That's good. Yeah.
So, what about training then? You worked out your own technique, or you could pick up tips from other people?
At that stage, I was staying at my parents' house in Kairanga. My father did work for a chap called Len Wall, and they let me keep a horse round the house, and I used to float it into fielding for a start to use the track there to train it.
Did you put it in a stall overnight, or was it just out?
No, just out. I built a yard and just out in the yard.
Incredible.
And he always used to walk all day. He wore a track around the fence.
Fence walker.
About 18 inches deep. And just used to walk. He took very little training. So by then I left.
Well, hang on. So you knew a lot about horses beforehand? Had you grown up with horses?
No, only grown up with horses. Because... when I was 15 and had to take over the farm, we used to have 3 draft horses, and I used to plough and things with those. Yeah.
And how did you find that? So you taught yourself that as well, or the horses already knew what to do, and you just
virtually? We had an old Fordson tractor on the farm, but I wasn't allowed to use that because petrol was rationed, and the petrol that was bought for the tractor went into the cars.
Okay.
Didn't they put dye in the petrol? Did they put dye into it so that... did that happen later?
No, it happened later. I can remember vaguely... one of the houses that my parents lived in, they built an extra room, and the electricians that came and wired did the work for a 44-gallon drum of petrol. And I think something in Leyland were the electricians, and one guy was a very big guy, and he lifted this 44-gallon drum of petrol up onto the back of their thing by himself.
So, Lynn, how much did you pay for that horse, as a matter of interest?
I had it on lease with right of purchase for £200. Yes, and they probably knew that it had a blind in one eye. And anyway, he won 8 races, and he used to scare at the start, and once he hit the front, once he began, he would lead all the way, and if something came alongside, he would just go faster. And one year, when the Manawatu Raceway opened, I worked him with a horse called Control, which came up from down south and was going to attempt the mile record for New Zealand. And they wanted me to act as a pacemaker, but I refused because I'd worked alongside this horse and he was faster than that horse. But anyway, they got another pacemaker and this horse called Control broke the mile record.
Here in Palmerston North, in Manawatu?
Yeah, at the raceway in Palmerston North. Right. Yeah.
Good.
So do you think you financially you came out ahead with that horse? Or?
When I finally sold him, was for £800. Pounds? No, $800 it was in those days.
Mm-mm.
When I bought the section at Ashes. Oh. Because that money paid for two sections of the issues.
Honestly, $800 paid for two sections?
Yes.
Wow. Mm. So did you do all the racing in the Manawatu or did you go anywhere else with him?
Mostly around here.
Mm.
But by then I'd moved into, with a chap called Colin Goss, to a property down Awapuni, which used to belong to the Devine family, who was a well-known family in Bums North. And we worked from there, and I took out a professional licence and mainly drove for several people who trained their own horses, partly with me, and Norm Croft from Wellington, Jack Gimlet from Danny Burke, and we, by then I was involved with my wife.
Was she your wife at that stage or were you?
No, she wasn't by that stage, but after we got married I continued on with these people and drove, and we did go to Auckland and and drove a horse for Jack Gilman called Frosty Lass, which won at Auckland and ran very close second at Cambridge and then was sold to America.
So you were driving it the whole for these two wins?
Yes.
Oh, that was good.
And that year I had 68 drives and 16 wins.
How? Gosh, that was good. So did you have to be a certain weight?
No.
Didn't matter?
No.
Yeah.
But
was it harder with it mainly with the same horses or...?
Different horses. Yeah. There was two that I think were probably my some of my best drives that other people couldn't win with them, and I had one drive for Bradley's at Howrah and the horse won and paid over $100. And the next year I drove another horse that the people couldn't get on with, and that one at Howrah and paid over $100 too. And
so does it take time for you and a horse to get to know each other, or you could just get on and race?
Most of my success came with driving straight out trotters instead of pacers.
Yeah.
And it, you just feel through your hands.
Okay. So, would you have had much contact with the horse before a winning race? Or
those two that paid the big dividends, I didn't have.
So you just went there?
Yeah.
Got in and drove and won.
Yeah.
Wow. So was that you had to read the character of the horse and
I don't
understand
know.
It?
Just happened.
The horse whisperer. So, Lynn, can you explain the difference between pacing and trotting?
Pacers controlled the both legs on one side move forward at the same time, whereas with straight out trotters the opposite legs move forward at the same time, and the pacers usually wear hopples to
keep their gait.
Interesting.
So was it seen as two different types of racing, or there were just two different categories at the same meet? Or
definitely two different categories.
Yeah.
They race against similar.
Horses. But you'd have, say, at a race meeting, there'd be a mix of the types of races.
Yes. Mostly pacing horses.
Yeah. Okay.
Usually two trotting races.
Okay. Yeah. And were they very popular then compared to other types of racing with horses?
Pretty well.
Was it mainly because of the gambling, or people just, it was a big event out?
Well, a lot of people involved in trotting have a lot more to do with their horses.
Oh, right, because they can drive it, they don't need a separate jockey.
When I was training at the Manawatu Raceway for different people, I liked to them to come down and drive the horse so they had feelings with that horse. There was a chap called Joe Murchison who was a well-known person around Palmerston North. Him and I leased a horse and it wouldn't begin. So Joe came down and he used to drive this horse round quietly. Most days he would come down and drive it round quietly, and one meeting was the first meeting at Wellington with a mobile start. And we said, right, we'll get this horse ready for that. Anyway, on the night it rained and they mobile start. So it was a standing start, and this horse had never gone away from a standing start. And I said to Joe, if it begins, I won't try. Mm-hmm. And Joe said, you can't do that, I'll put my money on the TAB. So I said, well, if he begins, I'll let him go. And of course he began and paid $16. And Joe got his money, I got nothing. But Joe deserved that because he used to spend a lot of time with his horse.
So, Lynn, are pacers faster than trotters?
Yes.
They are?
Yeah. Not always. I mean, there's...
But usually?
Yeah, but basically they are faster.
Okay. Interesting.
Would you say that this is as popular now as it was then, or more popular?
Now I would think most clubs are struggling, and I think it's just a population, I think, money thing. I think all sports are struggling.
I suppose there's a lot more happening now, I suppose.
There's far more things for people to be interested in.
But the cost of trainers, the cost of vets, the cost of entering, the cost of travelling, all add up to being making it a costly sport, I suppose.
No, there's not many people could afford to run a horse by themselves. mostly
syndicates.
A lot of syndicates.
So what was that, your main sort of leisure activity, or?
It was a hobby.
Weren't you involved in squash and rugby and running in Whanganui? Didn't you run in Whanganui?
Oh.
Athletics?
Part athletics.
Mm. But you ran here in Palmerston North?
Yes, I was involved in athletics in Palmerston North for a few years. Mm.
I think you were quite successful.
Well, sometimes, yeah.
And the squash? You played squash, didn't you?
The squash, when I played rugby out at Tikawa, I played for them for 5 years until we won the competition. And then I gave up because I was nearly 30. So I took up squash, and because I had seen too many people get old and try and play rugby and break a leg or something like that. So I took up squash.
So what level did you get to in squash?
C grade. B grade for a very short time.
And were you instigating the squash courts in Ashurst? Weren't you involved in that?
Yes, a chap called Alistair Clark and I decided we should have a squash court in Ashurst, and at the time they were involved in making the Village Valley Centre. And there was what supposed to be squash courts included in that building, but they ran short of money and said if we wanted a squash courts, we'd have to do it ourselves. So we took out debentures and got our squash court built.
Yeah. So can you remember how much it cost you?
No.
No. Were you involved in where farmers were asked to give a cattle beast or raise it, and then when it was sold, the money went to the Village Valley Centre?
That went to the Village Valley Centre. Yeah. No, it was totally amongst members that we raised the money.
It was a strong community in Ashurst, wasn't it, if they were able to develop those sorts of facilities?
Yes, it's certainly expanded though to what it was.
And how many members can you remember they had initially in the Ashurst Club?
No, I can't.
It's very popular.
So how long did you carry on with sport? You were able to keep up being sort of active in these sorts of things?
Well, the Ashurst Squash Club opened on your 50th birthday.
Yes.
I remember that because he was presented with a T-shirt with a big 50 on the back.
Which you now use for duster.
Probably about...
I think that's gone to you.
Oh, I don't know. Four or five more years? No, probably 10 years after that. Yeah. And then we had family coming, so...
Well, we already had family.
Yeah.
When the squash court was built.
Busy life.
So you were involved in committees and things with this sort of...
Really only squash, and then moved from there to bowls. And was on the committee in Ashurst for a few years.
So what was it? There's a big issue now with all the voluntary sector and people taking on roles, but through a lot of your life, people of working age would be involved in community activities yes, all, like this?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. And were you involved as well as an individual or as a wife? Was it both of you doing things? Or?
The school, your school committee?
As a... Yeah, I was on the PTA as it was then, and then a school committee. But and I played squash. I don't think I was ever on the squash committee, but Lynn was.
Yeah.
But I do remember filling in all the nail holes on the squash court floor. Because we did do a lot.
All the painting and...
We did a lot of the work ourselves. Employed, a contractor was employed to build the main part of the building, but a lot of the finishing off work was done by the club members.
Yeah, because you'd have time then with the old the Kiwi weekend sort of thing. Would that give you more time for that? Or
yeah, I don't know whether that was. I suppose we did. We did used to have the weekends.
Did any of the did your boys go to scouts, that sort of thing?
Yep.
The two boys go to scouts. Yep. Were you involved in? Yeah. So who was running that?
The Heatleys.
Heatleys mostly
were fairly prominent in the scouts and cubs and Ashurst in those days.
Neil Heatley and
Bill Curtis.
Yes, Bill Curtis was a local who was involved.
Max Grant.
No,
there was no shortage of volunteers or things those days. Not so much these days.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.